BetterHelp is the paid partner of this episode, and they are on a mission to make starting therapy easier. Therapy has been a safe space for me, where I've been able to find support and validation for my own early attachment and relational trauma patterns. It also provided the education and context to help me understand some of my responses, which led to an increased sense of self-compassion. What I love about therapy is it not only provides you with a trained therapist, it also leaves you with tools you can use on your own to support you on the healing journey. Starting therapy is easy with BetterHelp. Fill out a questionnaire and you will match with a therapist as soon as possible. One of the best features of BetterHelp is that if the first therapist doesn't feel like the right fit, you can easily switch to another one until you find someone you can easily connect with. They carefully make sure therapists on their platform are well qualified and their customer support team is there to help you if you have any questions. If you're struggling and think you'd benefit from a therapy session, go to betterhelp.com/healingtrauma during signup and get 10% off your first month of therapy.
Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast, a compassionate guide for those seeking to heal and thrive. Introducing your host, Monique Coven, a certified trauma recovery coach and fellow traveler on the path to healing. In this podcast, we will engage in heartfelt conversation with experts in the field of trauma healing. We'll explore ways to cultivate feeling safe in our bodies and in connection to others, so that we can be present to live the life we've been given more fully and with more joy. Join us as we navigate the way towards a life restored. Introducing your host, Monique Coven.
Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast. My name is Dr. Mark McNair, and I will be your guest host today. I'm filling in for my good friend, Monique Coven, and today I am absolutely thrilled to have with me Dr. David Grand. David is an author, psychotherapist, performance coach. He is involved in all types of humanitarian activities, and he is the developer of Brain Spotting. And again, like I said, I am so thrilled to have him. David, welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
So David, I'm going to start right away. I mentioned Brain Spotting, and I was wondering, for people who are not familiar with it, if you could tell us a little bit about what Brain Spotting is.
Okay. Brain Spotting is a psychotherapy, and it is particularly used with trauma, not just single event trauma, but complex trauma, adult and child trauma. But we say in Brain Spotting, where you look affects how you feel. And what that means is if you're thinking about something that's bothering you and you look off to your left and you see what it feels like when you look to your left, then you look to your right and you see what it looks like to your right. It feels differently looking to the left and looking to the right. Where you look affects how you feel. The eyes are incredibly connected in with the brain. The retinas and the optic nerves are purely made of neurons. In the eyes themselves, irises and the pupils, there's a lot of nerve endings in there. And the six eye muscles that hold each eye in place, called the extraocular muscles, are loaded with reflexes and loaded with neurons. So in that context, the eyes are actually a part of the brain. So now in 2025, when so many therapies are brain-based, brain-body-based, we look at the entire body, but we look particularly at the visual systems as ways of accessing deep into the deeper parts of the brain and into the body with focus and accuracy in a way that's hard to do with any other.
Big question here. How did this come about? How was it discovered, or how did you stumble on it?
Well, it was in 2003. And I had been working as a therapist for almost 20 years at that time, a little less, 18 years. I had taken through all kinds of different trainings, starting off with psychodynamic therapy, psychoanalysis, and relational therapy and insight therapy. And then I trained in EMDR in the early 90s, and I also trained in somatic experiencing in the late 90s. So I was using a combination of all these different approaches, and I was never using just one by itself. but it was sort of an integration of all the different models. And I was working with an ice skater who was blocked on one particular jump, not the most difficult jump. I was going across using very slow eye movements. EMDR uses fast eye movements. I slowed them way, way down. What I had her do, this skater, I had her think of this jump she was blocked on, the triple loop. What would happen is she'd skate, jump up, turn once, twice, and instead of completing the third revolution, she would, as skaters say, hop out of the jump after turning twice. So I had her literally in slow motion, not just see herself, but feel herself doing the jump and holding the awareness right on that moment that she would come out of it. I did very, very slow eye movements with her. And just as I got over to right next to her, you know, her eye started to wobble intensely, which I had never seen to that degree before. When I saw that, it was like a hand grabbed my wrist and held it in place, stopped moving. And then her eye went into a freeze lock, looking right at my finger. And she started processing in a way that I had never seen before. As she was looking at my finger, it was like she was illustrating a video after video that she had of traumatic experiences that she had on the ice in practice, in competition, falls, injuries, but also family traumas as well. It would come up and process. Another one would come up and process. This happened for about 5 minutes until a really interesting thing happened. Traumas that we had processed before and that we thought we had processed down to a baseline level reopened and then processed through to a deeper level. And other ones, you know, and it was just cycling through. And she was just looking at my finger and she was telling me exactly what she was seeing and what she was feeling. After 10 minutes, everything went quiet. Okay. And her eyes, you know, stopped that lock and there was no wobble. And I just gently finished up with her. And I had a feeling something really profound happened. I had a feeling it was a breakthrough, but I was afraid to really let myself think that or believe that. So the next morning, she called me from the practice rink and she said, David, I just did a triple loop again. No problem. I did it again and again and again. And she never had a problem with it again. We continued on in the therapy to work on some other issues. And we were using just looking for these reflexes in her eyes and face. At that point, I started to really think that this was something. And a lot of my clients at the time and still were therapists who used different kinds of processing therapy. So I wouldn't tell them what I was doing. I would just do these movements looking for reflexes in their eyes. Anytime I saw them, I would stop there and say, just keep looking at my fingers and just see wherever your processing goes. And what the feedback I got is, it feels like it's much deeper. Two people said, I actually feel it all the way in the back of my head where the brainstem is. But because these were therapists and, you know, therapists like to experiment, which is a great thing. They would go back into their office and they would try it out with some of their clients and come back and tell me about the experiences that they had. By the time I got to the third or fourth week, I really knew that this was a breakthrough technology. And that was the beginning of brain spotting.
If you're okay with this, I'd like to do a little role playing with you.
Sure.
I'm going to come in as the patient and I have had a history of complex trauma. I've been physically abused and sexually abused. Where do we go from there?
Is this a first session or an ongoing session?
This is a first session.
Okay. We say in brain spotting, the client comes for therapy with us with the neuro experience of their own frame. And they bring that frame in, whatever it is, and we mindfully receive that frame and hold it and shape it with it.
Okay.
Now I'll bring this to what that really means. Even if I know a little bit about your history as you come in, I'm not thinking anything. I am waiting for you to come in and I'm waiting for you to reveal yourself, however you reveal yourself. And you could talk about one of a thousand or one of a million different things. I'm not thinking, okay, he's a survivor and he has complex PTSD and this is what it is. I'm just receiving the frame that you bring in, whatever it is. And it could be anything.
So I come in and I say to you that I am struggling with flashbacks of sexual abuse.
Well, I would ask, have you had prior treatment, what that would be? So we have a sense of what kind of work that you have done and also whether it has been more or less effective. I don't take a formal history. I take notes of everything that the client says and that the history reveals itself, not just in the first session, but in every session. So I would just say, well, I wouldn't say, okay, let's do brain spotting. I'd say, what can you tell me about yourself to help me to understand you better? And that's an open question. And after I ask that question, I'm ready for you to say anything. I have no preconceptions about it. is called the uncertainty principle. The human nervous system has 1 to 4 quadrillion synaptic connections, which are more than the known stars in the universe. So I don't care if I've worked with 50 or 100 people who have similar profiles to you. I'm not thinking about them. I'm not thinking about anything that I've taught or I've learned or I've read. I'm just receiving you for who you are, how you are, as an absolutely unique individual. And with that, if you say, tell me anything about you that would help me to understand you, then I'm ready for you to say whatever you say, and it could be anything. You could talk directly well. You could go right into talking about the abuse and who are the perpetrators and when it happened. You could start talking about the flashbacks that you have now, or you might talk about something completely different. Okay. You could talk about parenting, marital relationship, things at work, anything like that. Wherever you go, I don't assess it. I just receive it and follow you wherever you go. I'm looking to give you in that first session an experience with brain spotting, but I don't want it to be too intense or overwhelming with this history. You know, it's hard not to be. So as you're telling me, whatever you're telling me, I'm watching where your eyes go. We have 3 main ways of finding relevant eye positions that give direct focus access to the deep brain and body. So if you're telling me, if you start talking about whatever you're talking about, and you start looking up over here, I'm noticing that. It might be in 5 or 10 minutes, or it might be halfway through the session where I say, by the way, I notice that you're looking at something up over here. Just keep looking at that. Tell me what you're feeling in your body right now. I might even say, how intense is it, 0 to 10? Or I might not, if it's not organic. And just notice what comes up. Notice what comes next, what comes next. I want you to be curious about it. I want you to trust it, because I'm curious and I'm going to trust your process. And I'm going to follow you, and we're going to follow you wherever you go. Just let the processing go on that spot. And for about a minute, then I'm going to check in. It goes for about a minute, then I check in. And it could just be very gradual, slow processing. He could be right into a flashback. I'm going to look not to have him get overwhelmed in that first session. Okay. So if he starts to really dissociate or destabilize, I'm going to slow the process down. I'm going to bring him off of that spot, more eye contact, more dialogue, more maybe helping him to see where he feels more grounded in his body and so on. But let's assume that that doesn't happen. He'll be processing on that spot and I'll be checking in periodically. Some clients I'll check in more frequently if, again, there's more of a chance of them getting flooded or destabilized. Yeah. But he may go into deep processing and I might be checking in every 5 minutes or even 8 or 10 minutes. I have 60-minute sessions, so I have that time latitude. After, let's say it goes that way, with about 10 minutes to go in the session, I'll say, okay, you know, I want you to come back to me right now. And I just let them settle in. I say, just where are you at now? What are your thoughts about what you just experienced? And whatever he says, I'm not looking for anything specific. I'm looking for him to tell me where he's at and what his experience is like and what his perspective is on it. And from there, we begin to assess how the person responds to brain spotting. We take it from there. I would say before you leave, this is a very intense process. You may feel it right now or you may not feel it. But I want you to know that the processing doesn't stop when the session stops. You're going to keep processing. So just be mindfully aware of that and just kind of notice it the way you're noticing the session. And over the course of the next couple of hours, or maybe even go to the next day or something like that, you'll keep processing until it just sort of comes to a natural soft landing.
I have done brain spotting and I've done a lot of it and it has been so helpful for me. And that's why, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on. I had talked to you about it and the idea of me dealing with sexual abuse from my dad, something I had never talked about. I was never willing to talk about it in detail. I found brain spotting was wonderful because there was no therapist asking me all of these questions about it. It was, I came in, I had decided that I wanted to deal with that. I did the idea of saying from 0 to 10 where I was at, and it was probably a 10, and I felt like it was over a 10, discussed what was going on inside of me, just the feelings that I had and where they were. And then I sat and processed the event and I noticed, David, for the first time in my life, I was able to talk about this with ease and without shame and without guilt. It was just amazing. Within that hour session, I was able to do that. What happened? What transpired in that as far as brain, speaking about brain? Because I couldn't even think about it before without climbing out of my skin.
Well, first of all, when we have a flashback, we're experiencing in the present the body sensations and the emotions and all the different sensory aspects of it of what we at the time of the abuse. Let's say it happened when you were 5 years old and now you're 40 years old, for discussion's sake. That means that that intense feeling that you had, that 10, you know, 10 out of 10, whatever else was going along with it, you were feeling right now, 35 years later, a good amount of what you felt back then, 5 years
right.
ago. Okay, out of time and out of place. As you processed, more and more of your brain started, the parts of your brain that were in flashback started to come into the present. Okay, and the brain knows how to heal itself given the right circumstances. So step by step by step, from the inside out, on that spot with the therapist who was there for you, but not pushing or guiding or intruding or making you talk, your nervous system was coming out of the past and more into the present. Okay, so in the beginning, if you're like in a flashback from when you're 5 years old, of course, it's going to be something you have trouble talking about or don't want to talk about. But when you've come from the past, from the then and there, you know, it's also the location, to the here and now, then you have perspective on it that you don't have when you're in the flashback. So then, and you also have the choice to talk about it or to not talk about it. Because trauma takes away choice and control, and healing helps a person to take back the choice and control. Another answer to your question is that when you're in the flashback and the activation is a 10, what we call the limbic system. This is also the mammalian brain. It's the emotional brain, the intuitive brain, but it's the flight-fight brain, okay? Your limbic system was activated now as if the abuse was just about to happen, it was happening, or it just happened. So that also takes you offline from your thinking language brain. So as you are processing, your limbic system, your limbic activation very gradually went offline. Okay. Because if someone took a scan of your limbic system right as you started the session, you would look like someone who's just about to be attacked or hit by a bus or something like that. And gradually your limbic system came out of fight, you know, flight and fight, and came into more of the orientation to the present. Now, it doesn't mean that what happened wasn't terrible. It doesn't mean that you don't carry feelings about it. But there's a world of difference between feelings about your history or being in flashback when your history is, you're living it right in the moment.
I felt like I was in it, like it was happening, like you said. And then after the session, I felt like I was standing back talking about something that happened.
Exactly. You went from the then and there to the here and now.
Right. And that's what needs to happen, I think, a lot of times with trauma. There's a concept that you talk about with brain spotting, and I want to throw it to you and have you explain it to people. And that is following the comet. I love this.
Yeah. The therapist tries to get in the tail of the comet. And that metaphor is apt because it means that the client in their processing is always ahead of the therapist, you know, and that all the therapist tries to do is to follow that client, get in, be in the tail of that comet and follow the head of the comet wherever it goes. If you look at most psychotherapies have the therapist sitting there in the position as the expert, and the therapist who sort of takes control over the process in a genuine desire to help and so on. But by doing that, the therapist inadvertently tries to become the head of the comet. And then the therapist, the client has no place to go other than to be in the tail of that comet. But the human nervous system of each client is not only vast and complex, it's lightning fast. Okay?
Yeah.
So that a therapist can never know where the client is going. They can never be where the client is at. They can at best follow the client wherever they go. And that's the tail of the comet. And when you are in the tail of the comet, you're not presupposing what's happening. You are just in a state of open curiosity and trust of the client's process. And when you do that, they will go places that you could have never predicted and never made happen.
Do you think at times being at the head of the comet as a therapist, you end up controlling, and that definitely inhibits the client from being able to process fully?
To process very much at all.
Okay.
The nervous yeah. system, given the right circumstances, knows what to do. So when you when you're working with the nervous system that by the frame that you're holding with the client is now able to process in the present what it couldn't process in the past, you can't make that happen from the outside. It's the genius of the nervous system that knows how to heal given the right circumstances.
You talked earlier about different ways that you were trained, and I'm just wondering how you would describe brain spotting. What is it compared to some of the others? We talk about somatic, we talk about mindfulness, we talk about all different things, but how would you conceptualize brain spotting?
Have you ever had those days where everything just feels harder than usual and you can't quite figure out why? Recently, I've learned that sometimes it's not just stress or lack of sleep. It could be my hormones at play. That's where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. Just answer a few questions about what you're going through and where you're at in life. And the best part, after taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. Taking care of your hormones isn't just about feeling good right now. It's about investing in your long-term health. By taking the hormone quiz, you'll learn more about your hormone balance and can make small, intentional changes to support your body, whether it's with Hormone Harmony or another Happy Mammoth product. The quiz helps guide you towards solutions that work specifically for you. One of the best things about Hormone Harmony is how it's become such an essential part of so many women's daily routines. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. In fact, a survey found that 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw improved mood, and 100% said they felt like themselves again. Ready to start feeling like yourself again? Head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order with my code HEALING at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HEALING for 15% off today.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a 1-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
Spotting is not out off on its own, not associated to other therapies. Brain spotting has evolved from other therapies, and it continues to evolve. And brain spotting is also an open integrative model, so it can be integrated with different modalities. In this most simplified form, brain spotting is a somatic relational mindfulness therapy. Somatic meaning we're always checking in with what the client's feeling in their body, but we're working with the visual system. Some people think of somatic therapy, it's just in the body, and like the eyes would have nothing to do with it, as if the eyes aren't the part of the body or aren't even a crucial part of the body. We make use of the visual systems in ways that very few, if any, therapies do, but we do it in the context of the relationship. You see, if you're trained in a body-based therapy or technical therapy, everything's about the technical, as it should be in that context. And the relationship, sort of the therapist does the relational work, but it's not part of the theory base or the practice base of that modality. In brain spotting, we put the relationship front and center. We say that the most important healing aspect of brain spotting is the attuned presence of the therapist with the client. Okay. And then all the technical stuff comes on top of that. We call it the dual attunement frame because it's the relational frame first and then the technical frame, which is the somatic visual frame on top of that. And of course, so we're brain-based, we're body-based, we're relational-based, and we're also mindfulness-based. Remember, we guide the client on the spot, aware of their body activation, to follow their processing wherever it goes, which is really mindfulness. It's just a very focused form of mindfulness. So brain spotting brings all of those together, but it's in the context of the uncertainty principle. We go in with each client, as you came in with in your hypothetical situation. We go in knowing that you can't possibly know what's going on inside of the client. That's why all you can do is follow the client wherever they go. And that's not existing in most therapies. Even a lot of the body-based and the mindfulness-based therapies, there's a certain amount of guidance that comes from the therapist that's not part of brain spotting.
So you talked about evolution of brain spotting, and you talked about it continuing to evolve. I'm wondering, David, if you could share with our listeners that idea of where brain spotting kind of started. You mentioned some of it, but where you've seen it grow from there and evolve.
Well, at first, it was just a very technical therapy using finding different eye positions, some through scanning across, just like I did with a skater, looking for reflexes in the eyes, the face, and so on, and then stopping there. And then from there, it went, clients were guiding me, you know, oh, it's more over there, more over there. I said, how do you know it's over there? Well, I just feel it. And that became the second way of finding the eye positions. That was the next evolution. And what I mentioned to you about looking to see where the client gazes, I mean, I should have noticed that first because it's the most present and ubiquitous. I kind of noticed that last. That became another way. But that was all technical. But at a certain point, again, I'm a trained relational therapist, you know, an insight-oriented therapist. At a certain point, I realized that you not only shouldn't sacrifice that, you can't sacrifice that. So I helped brain spotting to evolve into both a technical and a relational therapy, putting them both together. As this went on, I and with the help of other brain spotting experts, found different ways of doing what we do. Using one eye, you know, there's a big difference between what you feel or perceive with one eye covered or the other eye. Using distance, using two spots, two different spots, sometimes a spot that's more active and another spot that's more grounded, you know, doing parts work, you know, with different parts of the cells, usually young parts. So brain spotting also became more of a developmental model or more of an explicitly developmental model as we went on. But I want to say the last thing, which goes back about 3.5 years, I was looking for a model that would be a superordinate model, not just for brain spotting, but for all psychotherapies, and a model that would be a model for therapists, for who we are, and what we experience with our clients in our offices, okay? I called it the neuro-experiential model because it comes from everything deep in the nervous system or nervous systems, because we have multiple nervous systems, and also like how it comes to conscious awareness through our senses and our perceptions and so on. Again, this is really very recent in the evolution of brain spotting. It's an alternate model from what's called the evidence-based model that is based on single variable research studies, which has something to do with what we see in our offices, but a lot of the research doesn't really go along with what happens with our clients, you know, which shows everything has its limitations. And also, in addition to the evidence-based model, is the diagnosis model, where we have these diagnostic manuals, the DSM-5 and the ICD-10, that breaks down all the different manifestations into different categories by looking at different symptoms. If you have enough symptoms, then you get a diagnosis. And the diagnosis ends with the word disorder. Well, if you're a developmentalist, you know, you don't see what are called symptoms and we call manifestations. You don't see that as a disorder. You know, if someone falls down and breaks their shoulder, you don't call it a broken shoulder disorder. It's a broken shoulder and it came from what it is and it will, with support, will heal. So if someone is like the client or you referenced yourself, you know, a survivor of childhood sexual abuse or incest, and you have the flashbacks and you have hypervigilance and other kinds of symptoms, recall symptoms. We don't see those as symptoms and we don't see that as disorders. We see that as the natural response to totally unnatural circumstances, you know? And the person will maintain those reaction patterns because there's parts of them that are still stuck at that time and stuck in flashback. But that's not a disorder. That's a natural phenomenon. What's disordered is what it is done to a child by a parent or another adult. it's the actions of the perpetrator that are disordered. So when you pin that on the client and you say the client has complex post-traumatic stress disorder, it's a subtle way of blaming the client for having these manifestations instead of seeing it as the natural outcome for some totally disordered and destructive things being meted out on that young being.
I love that because it seems like that removes some of the shame that people carry around with them.
Well, I say to my clients, especially survivors, when you let go of the shame and you let go of the guilt, it has no place to go other than back to the perpetrator. One of the things that perpetrators do is they pass their own shame and guilt onto their victims so that they don't have to carry it. That's part of what the abuse is about. And by the victims or the survivors holding the shame and the guilt, letting the perpetrators off scot-free.
Right.
So, you know, it's a perspective that many survivors find helpful.
Absolutely. We talked about brain spotting with the idea of trauma. We talked about it in sports performance. How about other things that people struggle with, whether it's anger or depression or anxiety, let's say?
Everything is developmental. If a person has anger, depression, or anxiety, it doesn't come out of no place. It comes from the person's developmental experiences. Now, we look developmentally back to the early days, weeks, months of life. We look back to the birth experience. We even look to the intrauterine experience. And we also look back to generational experience as well, because we know things are passed on generationally from our ancestors. And we also look at things genetically too, because anxiety and depression can have a genetic predisposition to it that gets really brought out or worsened by environmental experiences or traumatic experiences. Plus, we never see what are called symptoms that we call manifestations. We never see them out of context. We always see them in context. Out of context is if you visit a psychiatrist because you have chronic depression or chronic anxiety, and they give you a medication that is supposed to help you with that. And there's a time and a place for medication, you know, for sure. But if they're not looking at your developmental history, they're treating what are called symptoms in the present without any sense of a context for it. And therapists who are not developmentalists, and a lot of the ones whose research is through evidence-based practice are not developmentalists, which it's interesting, they call it research when they're not even looking at the science of human development. What's off with that picture? There's a real breakdown in the field of psychotherapy between therapists who are developmentalists, who tend to look at and work with trauma and dissociation, and also how it's held in the body as well, and those therapists that just don't look at things that way.
This has been wonderful. I have one more question. I just want to open it up to you to talk about your passion, what your thoughts are going forward, what gets you up in the morning, whatever you want to go with that, David. The floor is yours.
Well, I'll say in the field and out of the field. In the field, it's a matter of how we can help people to heal better. And the idea that brain spotting has been reported by clients and has been seen by therapists as being particularly helpful, you know, with clients who really hadn't had the same success in other therapies or with other therapists. That's not enough for me. I believe that we've just scratched the surface with this. And I think that when it comes to helping heal people who are carrying the manifestations of trauma and dissociation, especially early repeated abuse, that there's not a code, but there are many codes that the more we find these codes, the more we can help people to heal, not over years, but over months, and not just partially, but more completely. So that's a passion of mine. That's a fascination. Outside of that, I love sports. I'm a New York sports fan, you know, Mets, Knicks, and Jets, and so on. And they go all year round, so I follow that. I also am very interested in television and film, and there's so much incredible films that and series that stream now. Now, I like to find the ones that are really works of art, yeah. You know, in all the different aspects. I do love working with athletes and working with actors, and I've found ways to adapt brain spotting for that. Athletes and artists all have traumas. They have personal traumas, and they have traumas in their sport or in their creative endeavor, which creates performance anxiety and performance blocks and things like that, at least the perception of performance blocks. So it gives me a chance to be sort of like almost on the side of the athlete or the side of the actor or dancer or, you know, graphic artist. It gets me closer to that. And I have a lot of fun with that.
Last time we talked, you talked about seeing clients and just seeing miracles happen. And that helps you to deal with what you hear. Could you end with that?
Well, there's a thing called vicarious traumatization that therapists have, where the therapist gets traumatized by hearing about the traumas, some of which it's because it resonates with their own personal traumas, and some is just terrible stuff. And I came up with the concept we call limbic countertransference, that all the exposure to the client's traumas activate the limbic system of the therapist. So, and there's traditional ways of helping yourself with this, which is doing some mindfulness, some exercise, breathing, all these things, and they have value. But to me, the best antidote for the vicarious exposure that gives you the limbic countertransference is to sit with the client as they heal and wait for the miracles to happen, because they happen sooner or later. Sometimes it's later, so you have to be patient, but to really wait for them. And when that happens, the uplift you get from that really helps you to counterbalance and even release the manifestations of the exposure.
Thank you for that. As we end, there's professionals that listen to this, and there's also a lot of people who have had trauma that listen to this. How can they find out more about brain spotting?
I have the website, brainspotting.com. It has all the information about how to get trained, and has information about what brain spotting is, and it has information about how to find a therapist wherever you are, not just in the United States, but around the world. So we have that. The book that I wrote on brain spotting, that's published by Sounds True, that's a good compendium, and it's in book form, in Kindle form, and also an audiobook. So there's plenty there. You can just go Google brain spotting, and there's a lot of content online right now, and most of it is good.
David, thank you for this time. I really appreciate it. And I know, I just want to end by saying I am really grateful, because I know how much brain spotting has helped me in my healing.
You're most welcome. And I say your healing is my blessing.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. BetterHelp recently surveyed over 16,000 people and found that while 75% of people believe it's wise to seek support, only 27% of Americans are in therapy, and people stay silent to avoid being judged. BetterHelp has over 10 years of experience matching you with the right therapist, because we're all better with help. Visit betterhelp.com/stopthestigma for their first ever State of Stigma report, the latest in mental health research.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.